Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Merry Christmas and hello. My name is Jeff Westover, and this is the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com, our year-round merry podcast of all things Christmas. This is episode number 37 of the Merry Little Podcast, making this the 100th podcast overall that we have put out since 2010 from MyMerryChristmas.com. This Merry Little episode is just a small taste, just a teaser and a sampler of our bigger, better, and much longer episodes of what we have called for 8 Christmases now, the Merry Podcast. Each episode of the Merry Podcast is exclusive to the premier members of the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas. And what makes them premier? Well, what makes them premier is that they fund the efforts of Santa's sleigh, which is our little way of giving a little Christmas back to the world each year. We take the proceeds of member donations and membership sales to fund Christmas for a few folks in need. This is all done at santasleigh.org, and you can participate by joining the premier ranks of the Merry Forums at MyMerryChristmas.com. And not only will you help some folks out, but you'll get the hour-long episodes, more than 60 of them now, of the Merry Podcast. So we move on now with the show. And this time, it's about a rumor that's going around that the Christmas stocking has nothing to do with St. Nicholas. This rumor was brought to my attention by a friend who read an article out there. He's a professional Santa who took great umbrage to this idea that something so closely associated with Santa could be dismissed so quickly in an article without much in the way of thought or research. It's the first time, this Santa said to me, where I saw exactly what you've been saying about Christmas on the internet and how much poor information there is out there. What he saw was an article claiming that the Christmas stocking had nothing to do with St. Nicholas, that it could never have been St. Nicholas who started the tradition of the Christmas stocking, because Nicholas lived hundreds of years before the invention of chimneys. I kid you not. This was the premise. In the end, the stocking was attributed to Odin, a pagan god many claim represents the real ancient roots of Santa Claus. I'm still trying to understand what the point of the article is beyond it being clickbait. The headline you see was something akin to, "Your Christmas stocking doesn't come from St. Nicholas." Well, of course it does. The Christmas stocking actually has nothing to do with chimneys. That's an odd thing. The reality of Christmas stockings is that they've been a tradition of Christmas and of Santa Claus since long before any of us were born. For many of us who didn't have the internet when we were children, it is a tradition born of magic and imagination. Getting the orange in the toe of our stocking was something that happened to our grandparents, and it was something that we and they enjoyed and anticipated. It was not something like this that we hear today.
Instead of a toy, I got a fruit. I got a freaking orange, yeah, I got a fruit.
understand this, one needs to understand the difference between history, myth, and legend. The Christmas stocking cannot be understood as history and myth, but it is easily understood as legend. We have told the story many, many times before, and we will tell it again. St. Nicholas, as history points out, is real enough. A genuine person, a religious figure, one of consequence in his community, and one so influential overall that you would be hard-pressed to find any one of his contemporaries as well-known as he was outside of maybe Jesus Christ. He came in an age when there wasn't media, there were no books, there were no smart-alecky millennials on the internet. His legend, however, was so great that he was known thousands of miles from where he lived, and for generations after his lifetime, places and children were named after him, and his name, the name of St. Nicholas, was invoked with reverence and admiration in many languages. How does that happen in an age without media? Well, kids, believe it or not, it's easy to explain. I look to today's sports figures as a means of drawing a comparison, of setting up the making of legends. This past year, for example, Dwight Clark, a football player from the 1980s, passed away. When he died this past year, it garnered a lot of headlines, and I can recall crashing a conversation with some millennials at where I work who were marveling over his story. Clark was a San Francisco 49er who was famous for what is known as the catch, a touchdown throw that has, for lack of a better term, become legendary. It launched the 49er run during the era of the 1980s of Super Bowl championships. When I mentioned while crashing this conversation at work that, yeah, I saw it live back in the day, you could hear everyone hush as if I was an eyewitness to an incredible historic event. Well, it was a great event. It was fun. I was a 49er fan. I'm from that part of the world. But you see, in the 40 years since the catch, the story has kind of grown. The problems with legends is that few recognize them at the time that they are being legendary. The problem with legends is that they get distorted by actual history, and in time it's hard to separate the legend from the myth. The writer of the article saying the Christmas stocking has nothing to do with St. Nicholas dismisses the idea that St. Nicholas has been and even still is influencing generations. No, not through his actions, but through his legend. And legend, in this case, is history. Nicholas of Myra, try as he might, was a man who just wanted to give anonymously. He failed in that regard because of his position. When the city of Myra went hungry due to famine, it was Bishop Nicholas who led the march to the port to convince the captains of the ships docked there a portion of their grain stores to feed to the poor and to the hungry. They were starving. Well, people there said it couldn't be done. The captains wouldn't do it. In fact, the captains themselves said that they couldn't do it. But Nicholas convinced them that if they just gave up a small portion to the people so that they could be fed, that they, the captains, would arrive at their eventual destinations with a full accounting of their cargo. And somehow, Bishop Nicholas convinced them of this, and the people were fed. Thousands of people were fed. That is the fact. That is history. But thousands of people who were there told that story. They didn't tell the story of the captains. What happened to them? The truth is we don't really know. They went on their way, they came back in later seasons and ported at Myra without notice or fanfare for years afterwards. The story of their less than usual amount of cargo never gained traction. It didn't matter. But it was the exploits of Bishop Nicholas that were carried by these captains and their crews from port to port. Word of mouth, that is the stuff of legend. But Jeff, you say, maybe the clickbait writer is right. Maybe the Christmas stocking has nothing to do with Nicholas. Maybe he has a point about Nicholas living before the invention of the chimney. Well, I'm not going to waste my time or yours about the history of the chimney. Chimneys have as much to do with Christmas stockings as palm trees have to do with Christmas. You see, the stories of St. Nicholas not only did not die with him, they grew. They grew because he did great things. Doers of great things, even the humble Dwight Clark would have told you, are often credited with stuff that never once crossed their minds. Somehow the stories of Bishop Nicholas survive not only his time, but also the times of the Dark Ages that came after him. By the time the modern media was born in the 18th century, the stories and legends of Nicholas were ingrained in multiple European societies. Those societies, those European descended folks, immigrated to North America, to the United States, to New York City, that great melting pot of nationalities and traditions, not only brought the seed of Nicholas' history with them, but it all set the stage for not only the Santa we now know, but also the Christmas we now celebrate. The Christmas of the old world was not universally loved. We make note of it all the time with the well-documented attitudes of the pilgrims, who were famously anti-Christmas, so-called. And there was good reason for their attitudes, and that's because Christmas in England, in the old world, and in other European countries, Germany, Austria, Poland, other places, was a raucous and riotous time. It was a time of violence, a time not only of what the Puritans called sin, but also of very public disturbance. There was cross-dressing. There were sexual activities of a public sort. There was the shaming of religion, of tradition and history, and the mockery of the church and anything and everything having to do with sacred tradition in the old world Christmas. Stephen Nissenbaum's book of the late 1990s called The Battle for Christmas, I think, explains the situation nicely. Modern Christmas was born of the free-for-all that played out on the streets of New York in the 18th century at Christmas time. From all of these blended immigrant societies, New York seemed to be the one place where the secularists of Christmas of their time took to the streets in gangs and created chaos for weeks on end. It was so bad that they fought for decades to control it. They knew they were going to lose control of the city during the last 2 weeks of the year, and they did almost every year. The answer for those who were seeking to solve this problem came in a common figure that all of them knew. The answer came from St. Nicholas, the one figure nearly every immigrant community within New York respected. Thanks to the writers of this literary period, Washington Irving for one, and a contemporary of his, Clement Clark Moore, I'm talking now the early 19th century. Well, they changed the legend of Nicholas. They grew it. They promoted it. They shaped it. And they radically changed it. Moore's poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, as we call it these days, told the Nicholas legend in a new way. It stripped Nicholas of his bishop's robes. It distorted who he was by generating the clickbait of their time by sensationalizing details, much as people do today in writing about the catch of 40 years ago. Stockings were hung by the chimney with care, the poem says, not because Nicholas actually used stockings for anything. Stockings were merely a literary license, an imaginary detail blended with truth that just made for better storytelling. You see, the real story of Nicholas was born of his aiding a family in the dark of night. Being a bishop, this was his job. But he didn't want credit for his good deed. He was just fulfilling a need and doing so anonymously, as was his way. So he would, in the shadows of darkness, deliver his anonymous gift to this poor family and merely leave it for them where they would find it in the morning. Sound familiar, Santa fans? He did this not once, but several times for this family. And we might never know about it today if he didn't get caught. But he did get caught, and he couldn't stop the story from going out. And because he was Nicholas, known around the world for his giving deeds, the story was told again and again and again. That's why it survived all the way to New York and to the 18th century. That's why Moore and Irving took hold of it during that post-revolutionary period. The way Nicholas did his giving was always something of discussion, just as the catch is debated as great because of how Clark leapt, or how he ran, or how his feet somehow defied gravity and his hands clung to the ball. None of that stuff matters. The fact is, it happened. With the Christmas stocking, it doesn't matter now how it happened. It happened. Stockings became forever linked to Nicholas because generations afterwards, his story was told by different people in different ways. His point was the giving of gifts anonymously. He did it by leaving it on the porch, according to some. He did it by throwing it through a window, according to others. He did it by entering the home and stashing it where it could be found later, others said. Some fantastically said that he took it and threw it up over the roof line of the house where it went down the chimney and landed in the stocking of the girl. The point wasn't how he did it. The point was that he did it. But what about that freaking orange? What is it all about, and why is it, too, a tradition of generations beyond our grandparents? Well, some say the gift that Nicholas gave to this family was money. Some say it was gold. Some say it was a bag of gold. And some even say it was a ball of gold. The story of the gift, you see, has shifted too. At first, it was a gift to the hardworking father. The father needed the money to save his daughter. His daughter was in danger of being sold into prostitution, the story eventually became, because this was how desperate they all were. The gift then shifted to the eldest daughter, then to the middle daughter, then to the younger daughter. Again, none of these details mattered. Only that Nicholas did it. That's what mattered. Somehow that ball of gold landed in the girl's stocking, whoever she really was, and that gave rise to the tradition of the freaking orange in the toe of the stocking. After Moore's poem hit the newspapers in the 1920s, the story was republished again and again and again every Christmas season. It was almost 20 years before anybody even knew that Moore wrote that poem. In American society, Christmas in the early 19th century was not only celebrated, but it was focused squarely on children. As had been done in other societies for centuries, American children were taught the lessons of Christmas through two figures, Jesus Christ and Santa Claus. To read journals of the 19th century, especially those who were grandparents in the 1880s, their Christmas memories consisted of childhood traditions of singing songs of Christ at Christmas and waking up to the surprises of Santa Claus. Those surprises were not found under Christmas trees, which were a 20th century tradition. They were found in stockings. Big stockings. That was the Christmas Eve tradition of children in the 19th century, to find the biggest stocking they could. Never did they hang their own stocking, or even their mother's stockings. They went after Dad. I wonder how many Christmas Eves were spent by fathers all over the fruited plain who were barefoot on Christmas. We may never know. But the tradition is sure enough. History tells us that. St. Nicholas just fueled the legend, and he continues to do so. Join us at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we still enjoy the lessons of Bishop Nicholas and the traditions of the Christmas stocking and the legend of the bishop's gold symbolized by the orange in the toe of the stocking. Avoid the clickbait, kids. Enjoy your traditions. Cling to them. Question them. Explore the history, the myth, and the legends. Enjoy the symbolism. Tell their stories. Celebrate your season. This is Jeff Westover of MyMerryChristmas.com, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.